Good morning, everyone. As Amy Kyle introduced me, my name is Jamie Raymond, and I'm a public health analyst at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's a pleasure and an honor today to present to you the CDC recommendations for improving health through transportation policy. And I do represent a larger group of scientists, communicators, policymakers at CDC who worked for about 2 years to pull together this document so that we can present it. Now, I do want to call your attention to a one-pager in the back of the room. This is kind of our executive summary of the recommendations document, and you may want to follow along on that as I go through the recommendations today. Thank you very much to the gentleman who's distributing those in the back. And I do have to say that I have no financial relationships to disclose. So as we go through the discussion today and as I'm presenting on the CDC recommendations, I would like you to realize that we did prepare this document as a utilitarian, from a utilitarian view of transportation. So thinking about all of the ways from the cradle to the grave that we need transportation in our daily lives to fulfill our needs. There are certainly aspects of recreational transportation that are very important for our health and well-being, but the current version of the transportation recommendations focuses more on the utilitarian aspects. And this is my outline very simply. I just wanted to first make the case for health and transportation, what those intersections are. We've heard from our speakers already this morning about the air quality aspect. At CDC, we also brought together folks from our Injury Prevention Center, our Chronic Disease Prevention Center, and our Environmental Health Center to think about those sort of ways that transportation and health intersect. And then I'll go into briefly the transportation recommendations themselves. So we start off with motor vehicle crashes, and I think if we were to go out onto 14th Street and ask someone on the street to say, how do you think transportation and health are related, I think kind of the most obvious connection for many people are motor vehicle crashes and the injuries and fatalities that result from those. In 2008, there were approximately 34,000 deaths due to motor vehicle crashes, and I will just draw your attention to the 2009 H1N1 epidemic. CDC estimated that there are approximately 36,000 deaths due to the epidemic, and I would argue that we are also having an epidemic of traffic fatalities in this country every year, and it's a silent epidemic. So I think that's just an interesting comparison in terms of the type of attention that is drawn to H1N1 epidemics, but we see the same numbers here in transportation. Millions of non-fatal injuries, as well as billions of dollars in medical costs and lost productivity costs. Motor vehicle crashes are the leading cause of death in ages 1 to 34. And we do know that over the years that we have been using motor vehicles in this country, we have improved the safety of our vehicle design. We have improved the safety of our roads. We have changed behaviors related to using seat belts and child safety seats. We have licensing systems and enforcement, and we have definitely brought the numbers down over time in terms of fatal crashes, but we still have as many fatal crashes annually as we had in deaths in the H1N1 epidemic. Dr. Bamer spoke very well on the traffic-related air pollution. I don't want to spend too much time then on this slide. I'm also quoting here from the Health Effects Institute exposure zone that through their work at Health Effects Institute, they have sort of defined this zone of exposure between 300 and 500 yards from major highways or roadways where the tailpipe emissions, which are carbon monoxide, nitric oxides, particulate matters, and hydrocarbons, are where people are most exposed to those. And in the Health Effects Institute, they also describe a causal relationship. They feel that there's enough evidence to state a causal relationship between exposure to traffic-related air pollution and the exacerbation of asthma. That paper goes on to suggest evidence of a causal relationship between exposure and the onset of childhood asthma, as well as respiratory symptoms, suggestive evidence of a causal relationship between exposure and impaired lung function. And I also think very significantly a suggestion of evidence between exposure and total and cardiovascular mortality as well as cardiovascular morbidity. And significantly this year in 2010, the American Heart Association, not the American Lung Association, the American Heart Association put out a statement on particulate matter to this effect, that the Heart Association does also believe in the suggested evidence of causal relationships between exposure and cardiovascular morbidity and mortality. We also know that those tailpipe emissions contribute to greenhouse gases, which affects our climate, and there are health effects associated with climate change. The third aspect that we have considered at CDC, and especially in our recommendations document, is the sedentary lifestyle aspect of the more time you spend in your car, the less time you have for many other activities of life, including physical activity, spending time with your family, doing chores around the house, all kinds of things. When a study was done in 2007 about who obtains recommended physical activity in the U.S., it was found that only 5% of adults. What a tremendous opportunity. Many people travel to and from work, to and from medical appointments, to and from post office. Wouldn't it be, isn't that a good opportunity to increase physical activity through active transportation? Certainly we know about calorie balance, and the calories in should be balanced by the calories expended through physical activity in order to maintain weight. We see in subsequent studies, on bicycle riding and weight control, where it was actually shown that bicycle riding in this cohort of women over a 15-year follow-up period, bicycle riding and brisk walking contributed to weight maintenance, and the effect was particularly strong among women who were obese or overweight to begin with in that study. Just some trend data, which I find to be very interesting. A study done published in the American Journal of Public Health just this year, comparing large data sets on active travel, obesity, active travel and achievement of recommended daily activity, active travel and diabetes rates. This graph may be a bit small to see, but I just want you to notice the general trend of the line here. Our x-axis is percentage of trips by bicycle and foot increasing this way. Our y-axis percentage of adults who are obese increasing this way. And we do see that as the number of the percentage of trips by bicycle and foot increases, we see a decrease in the percentage of adults who are obese. So I think this is very interesting, significant information. And so I hope I built up a case for you about the intersection of transportation and health, and I'd like to go now into the CDC recommendations for improving health through transportation policy. There are 8 of them there, and let's start right with number 1. Reduce injuries associated with motor vehicle crashes. Some examples of interventions are primary seatbelt laws, distracted driving laws, ways to keep people safe while they are in their cars. Comprehensive graduated driver's licensing systems, making sure that drivers are fit to drive at every age level, teenagers, adults, seniors. And also addressing roadway safety issues for all users through community design. So kind of stretching the ideas of transportation planners and engineers to focus on all users of the roadway, including bicyclists, pedestrians, people pushing strollers, people using scooters, all these different types of road users. Our second recommendation is to improve air quality. And some interventions are retrofitting diesel engines to decrease the amount of particulate matter, strengthening congestion mitigation and air quality programs, promoting transportation choices that reduce emissions, such as the active transportation options, bicycling, walking, and then shifting to those active transportation as well as public transportation options. There's a very interesting intersection, I think, between public transportation and physical activity that I would like to briefly mention. One study has shown that approximately a third of public transportation users achieve recommended daily physical activity just by walking from their home to the bus stop and from the bus stop to their office or their place or their destination. And that leads me right into our third recommendation to expand public transportation. Encourage funding that strengthens public transportation, giving some flexibility across different pots of funding within public transportation, encouraging transit-oriented development or development of communities around nodes of transportation access, and encouraging connectivity from bikes and peds with public transportation vehicles and stations. Fourth recommendation is to promote active transportation for the benefits of physical activity and utilitarian transportation, creating safe and attractive infrastructure, making sure that sidewalks are created, that bike lanes are striped, or that there are multi-use paths available, using comprehensive street design measures, sort of as I've shown here in the illustration, developing pedestrian and bicycle master plans so that as transportation investments are going across time, there's an awareness to, we're going to redo this road, we're going to go ahead and put a bike lane in while we do that upgrade, and implement safe routes to schools programs. Our fifth recommendation is to encourage healthy community design, designing street networks that facilitate active transportation that are safe and attractive for people to walk, and that that feel human-sized so that people are encouraged to walk to destinations, and encouraging that ensuring that all people have access to safe, healthy, and equitable transportation. We also want to just mention that we need to also be conscious that this is a complex problem, and we can't, in good conscience, encourage everyone to go out and ride a bicycle if we're not concurrently improving the physical infrastructure to support safe bicycling, as well as the idea of shifting people to smaller, more fuel-efficient, less-emitting cars. If you're a small car and there are 10 other cars on the road are large, you are at a higher injury risk. So these are kind of interconnected, complex changes that need to happen. And then again, requiring research and surveillance is one of our recommendations. We know that things that get measured get done. We currently do not have national systematic counts of users of bicycling and pedestrianism. We also would like to see inclusion of health and safety related questions in transportation surveys, and the vice versa, inclusion of transportation behavior questions in health surveys. Our eighth recommendation is to support professional development, expanding curricula for planning and engineering students to include health effects, and vice versa, include information on planning and transportation in public health curricula, and then provide continuing education for professionals. So how can public health practitioners use the transportation recommendations document? Please pick up a copy of the executive summary on your way out. You can go to our website at cdc.gov/transportation to download the full version. And then, you know, take someone out to lunch and tell them about it. Talk with your public works director in your community, or start with your local public health commissioner. Talk with your own peers in the health department, and reach out to those in the transportation department. Speak with your MPO board members, and if you don't know what an MPO is, come up and talk with me afterwards, and we'll talk about that. And then once you start building those relationships, look out for funding opportunities that you can improve health in your community through transportation changes. Go after funds that are available in different categories, and think about revising an urban planning or a planning document with an eye towards health. As I get to the end of the recommendations here, I do want to acknowledge the many, many people at the Centers for Disease Control who did contribute to this document. It was an effort of the Transportation Policy Group, an internal working group at CDC, which did bring together the policy offices from the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, National Center for Environmental Health, and the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control, and all of the scientists at CDC who also contributed. So thank you very much. This is the URL address for the transportation recommendations. I hope you'll take a few minutes to check them out one day. Thank you.
So we have a couple minutes for questions or comments. I'll let you.
Sure. I'll start here and then.
Hi, I'm Gary. I'm the director of the local public health agency in Washington State. I actually bike to work.
Great.
Bike and bus combination.
Super.
Law enforcement folks said, we don't want these things sticking out, so parking buses and so on. actually, one of the most important roles that CDC can play is doing the research and providing us at the local level with the tools to persuade those who are very reluctant to move this kind of policy forward. Mm-hmm. So I mean, just as an example, if we can make a compelling case, hey guys, there is no reason why you can't be putting our additional racks on your buses to accommodate expanded access.
Thank you. I'll just briefly, hopefully summarize a comment that an important from the audience, from this member of the audience, opinion is an important tool that CDC could provide to local public health practitioners would be tools, evidence-based tools to help open conversations and convince, particularly transportation planners and engineers, that there are benefits to considering the health aspects of their decisions.
One more short question.
In the aisle there, please.
Increasingly involved. And my issue comes to non-human areas. Central Valley of California was slapped with a non-human, and the threat was to take away all the highway lights. Mm-hmm. If that could be changed so that instead of taking away something, there was, okay, 30% instead of 1% of the money we're going to give you for transportation, it won't be freeway, it will be for alternatives, it would not be a punishment and it would be a message.
Yes.
I don't know how that happens, it's a huge issue, but I'm a bike here.
Thank you. So just to repeat the comment, I'll try to summarize. In congestion mitigation air quality areas, one of the sort of punishments for not achieving the level of air quality is to threaten to take away highway funds. And the commenter is suggesting, can we flip that from a negative to a positive and say, well, if you can't reach your CMAQ guidelines, let's shift your money from highway to active transportation or non-polluting transportation forms.
Okay,
thank you very much. I'll be around at the end for more questions.